Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Dawn Banks has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Dawn! Become a DTNS member right now at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, May 30th, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chain.
Sarah Lane has the day off, but with us today, Nicole.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Nicole Lee, senior editor at Engadget. Welcome back to the show, Nicole.
Happy to be here.
It's good to have you. We've got promises of 5G. We've got possible merger conditions for T-Mobile and AT&T. We have some augmented reality glasses. But let's start with a few tech things you should know. Gogo announced its 5G service will start with business aircraft, commercial regional jets, and smaller mainline jets in the U.S. and Canada in 2021. So it's not going to be on your big flights, and it's not going to be till 2021. Gogo will upgrade its existing 250-tower network, which will continue to fall back to 4G and 3G if necessary. And Gogo believes that 5G will deliver lower cost along with lower latency, meaning that it can keep its service prices lower. Within 48 hours of the magnitude 8.0 earthquake in Peru on Sunday, Alphabet company Loon had its internet balloons providing LTE coverage. Now, Loon also provided emergency connectivity in Puerto Rico after the Hurricane Maria in 2017. That deployment took a month, though. The difference this time is that Loon was already in the process of installing infrastructure and conducting tests with Peruvian partner Telefonica. So Loon's trying to say, hey, if we're on the ground preventatively, we can help help in these emergencies much faster. And the first YouTube channel to reach more than 100 million subscribers is India's T-Series channel. T-Series, if you don't know, began back in the 80s as Super Cassettes Industries Private Limited, selling copies of Bollywood songs before transitioning into producing new music, and the company is now known for original Bollywood music soundtracks and pop music and is India's largest music label, followed by Sony Music India and Zee Music, and now the owner of the largest YouTube channel ever. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Google and its ad blocking policies. Remember back in January, we did a main topic about Google announcing a change to the Chrome browser that would stop ad blocking extensions from using the web request API to block ads. I don't know if you remember that, but API web request lets extensions modify a request. So a request comes in to do something and the extension can go, okay, you can load that image, but no, you can't load that cookie. So this is what a lot of ad blockers use. uBlock uses it, for instance, to block cookies or JavaScript. This would, however, also allow a malicious extension to steal cookies. It's kind of an all or nothing thing, and that's one of Google's problems with it. Google wants to replace web request with declarative net request, which lists the kind of responses and requests to be blocked. So the extension would say, block cookie requests, block these kinds of requests, or redirect these kind of requests, and then the browser does it. That way, it speeds things up, and it would also stop malicious extensions from being able to take things. Declarative net request, however, does not allow for more complex patterns, and Google has said it would limit extensions to having 30,000 items on its declarative net request list. uBlock already ships with 90,000 filters, so it says that won't work with us. We can work with up to 500,000. Safari does this already. It started doing this in 2015, and Safari allows 50,000 net requests. Not that many more, but more. Google has said it might increase the amount. And the reason this is in the news today is that a while back, Google had walked back the idea, saying, hold on, we're not done with this version yet. But in a message this week, Google's Simeon Vincent wrote, Chrome is deprecating the blocking capabilities of the Web Request API in Manifest V3, not the entire Web Request API, although no one was worried about that. It's only the Web Request blocking. But anyway, blocking will still be available to enterprise deployments. So the headline is that you'll see everywhere that Chrome is deprecating Web Request ad blocking for everyone except enterprise. The enterprise can do it because maybe there's some internal extensions they want to use. He also wrote that they are planning to modify the install flow, which gave some people the hope that maybe during the install flow blocking might be allowed, and they just want to narrow it so that extensions can't get away with stuff. But Nicole, how do you feel about this? Google's saying we want to make things faster, which uBlock has said it doesn't make things that much faster, and we want to make it more secure.
I think there is a balance to be struck between the desire for things to be speedy and fast and also for things to be secure. But I also think the idea that there has to be some balance there. And I do think the concession to enterprise users makes sense. I do wonder, though, if they're working on another solution for consumers as well, because I think consumers really, you know, they have a legitimate reason of wanting to block ads. And not so much for enterprises, I'm thinking. I'm sure enterprise has their own, you know, internal use cases.
They want to block web requests for different reasons to block.
Right, a different reason. But I think for the consumer, there's a completely different, and I feel very legitimate reason for blocking ads too. So, I don't know. It just seems like one of those things where, like, you would think Google would have the enough manpower resources to come up with a solution to this. And hopefully they are, you know.
Yeah, I mean, uBlock is already pointing at Firefox saying, just do what they do. They've got a three-part system. You can just use that. But of course, Google has the pressure to limit ad blocking because it makes its money off ads. And even lot of these companies like Ghostery are focused on privacy, protecting your privacy often ends up blocking ads. I use Privacy Badger, and that runs up against ad blocking filters a lot because it says, oh, you're blocking ads. I'm like, no, I'm actually just blocking you tracking me without permission, but it ends up being the same thing a lot of times.
Firefox is out ahead here in many, many ways, like the privacy aspects of it, the non-tracking aspects of it. So maybe take a look at that in the meantime.
Yeah. And don't forget that even if you don't want to block cookies and ads, there's also blocking scripts where you're like, I don't want to authorize scripts run. That's why NoScript exists. And NoScript has said this wouldn't make it easy for them to work on Chrome either. So a lot of things to consider, and I hope Chrome's developers consider them. Android Police noted that Google updated its terms of service in the Google Play Store, requiring game publishers to clearly disclose the odds of receiving items for loot boxes, as well as other in-game lotteries, in advance of purchase. So before you buy a loot box, it's going to tell you your odds of getting that cool sword or whatever that you're wanting are 1 in 5 million or whatever the odds are. Apple introduced a similar requirement back in the App Store in late 2017, so if you're familiar with that, that's kind of what's going to be going on. Google also expanded rules against sexual content to include a ban on nudity or any clothing that's not acceptable in an appropriate public context.
Didn't they also ban like weed ordering apps?
I think that's part of the family stuff. I saw headlines about that. I did not see that in any of the respectable stories that I read.
Okay.
Now you're making me look it up though, because that's a great headline. But I did not see it in either the 9to5 Google or the Android Police story about this.
Yeah, I wonder if it's part of this thing about like, you know, making the Play Store a little bit more of a legitimate family friendly place in general. And I'm sure this loot box thing, it's a little different thing, but it goes to the whole like nudity ban. And
oh, wait, no, it's in the Android Police. You're right. It's in the Android Police story. It will ban apps that facilitate the sale of marijuana.
That's right.
And Google says it is working with developers to make their apps compliant with new rules rather than banning them from the Play Store altogether. So no, not banning them, but working with them just to make sure that they're not allowed to offer an in-app shopping cart feature.
Sure.
So in other words, you can still have your app and you can still tell people where to get it.
But you can't like buy it,
but you can't make it too easy.
Not too easy, right? So I think the loot box thing is good. I mean, loot boxes have been kind of an issue in the gaming community for a while. You know, like, you know, it's kind of like, it's kind of gambling, right? Like that's basically what it is, sort of. And I'm kind of okay with them like making it very clear like what your chances are for doing it. I don't see anything really wrong with that.
Yeah, I like the odds thing for sure. The nudity thing and the marijuana thing are both slippery slopes where it's like, okay, you get to do that because you run the Google Play Store, but at what point are you going to allow something that a lot of people don't want you to allow? And they're like, well, you block these other things. Why don't you block this thing that I don't
block? The browser, block Chrome, because that shows a bunch of stuff that you shouldn't see.
Right. You can get all kinds of things through the web. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I never use it. Microsoft announced it's going to bring its all-you-can-play Xbox Game Pass to the PC with more than 100 PC games. Microsoft's own games will be available on Game Pass for PC on day one. Members will get a 20% off discount in the Windows Store on games and 10% off downloadable content and add-ons. Microsoft did not mention how much this new service will cost, when it will launch, or whether it will be able to be combined with the Xbox version of Game Pass or be sold separately. Microsoft also confirmed that more Xbox Game Studio titles will come to Steam. Microsoft is also opening up support for native Win32 apps in the Windows Store, which previously was limited to Universal Windows platform apps, and that will apply to games as well. Do you game on the PC at all, Nicole?
I'm kind of a console person. I mean, I play on is the Switch these days because the Switch is everything for me. But this sounds great. If you're an Xbox Microsoft person, the all you can play Game Pass. I mean, more than 100 games. That's great.
I mean, it would be interesting to be able to combine them if you're an Xbox person and also want to play on the PC. But they're not saying whether that's possible or not. Roger, I know you were real excited about this.
I mean. You know, it's essentially just kind of a Netflix service for games that is, you know, going to be introduced on the PC, which I think is great. One of the big bugbears of playing games, you know, when you're on the PC is that there really isn't a subscription service. You buy, you play, and you get bored with it. You're kind of just stuck with shelling out the $50 or $60 that you paid for it. This will definitely allow people to get more a broader range of games that they can try out without necessarily having to spend more. which I think is what's so compelling about it. And if they combine it, I mean, again, no one knows yet, but if they really combine it with the Xbox Game Pass, that would be super dope, because there you are essentially just paying for one service and you can play on two different platforms, whether it's in front of the TV on your couch in the living room, or you're holed up in your, you know, your work office space with your PC. And, you know, it's kind of something that Microsoft's been working on. They had Play Anywhere that allowed you to buy with the one game that you could play either on Xbox or PC. I think there's maybe four or five titles that actually did it. But, I mean, it does kind of push the narrative that, you know, Microsoft wants these games to be kind of platform, eventually at some point, maybe platform agnostic, where, you know, regardless of what you're playing on, you can play these games.
Do you, would it matter to you if you had to pay extra to get your Xbox Game Pass and your Game Pass for PC combined?
It depends on how much extra. If it's like, you know, if it's basically the cost of both of them together, maybe not.
Well, yeah, then it's no different.
But if it's just like maybe, you know, 15-20% more to include both, I think there would be a lot of people that would totally dive into that, especially if they're portable accounts that you can say, hey, you know, I don't have a gaming PC, but my dad does. When I, you know, when I go home from college, I can go play in my family's computer. I just log in with my account, you know, and then I can, you know, play there and do whatever, kind of like what you do with Steam.
And Microsoft Studio titles coming to Steam, I always applaud more cross-platform ability. So that's good. I think they should do that, not just make them available in the Windows Store. 47 companies, including Apple, Google, and WhatsApp, signed an open letter to the UK's GCHQ, the UK security agency, urging the agency to abandon plans for a ghost protocol. Ghost Protocol sounds cool. It'd be a good name for an Xbox game. But it was, in this case, a proposal made in November by two UK government security experts describing a technique to send copies of messages to a third party, like a law enforcement party, besides the intended one. So I want to send a message to Nicole. I'm under suspicion or under a warrant. My messages would also be diverted to a law enforcement officer, not just to Nicole, without my knowledge. The idea would be to surveil a target without breaking encryption. So they're saying you don't have to put a back door in, just divert the messages our way. Now, the companies in this letter object on two grounds. One, it would require the injection of a new public key into a conversation without telling people. And two, it would require companies to suppress notifications that appear when a new person joins a chat, because in essence, these surveilled chats would become group chats. It's just only one person knows it's a group chat and the other two think it's just between the two of them. The companies say this would, quote, undermine the authentication process that enables users to verify they are communicating with the right people, introduce potential unintentional vulnerabilities, and increase risks that communication systems could be abused or misused. The National Cybersecurity Center's Ian Levy is one of the two authors of the proposal and said that the hypothetical proposal was always intended as a starting point for discussion and, quote, we will continue to engage with interested parties and look forward to having an open discussion to reach the best solution possible. So, Nicole, on the one hand, it doesn't seem like this really solves a lot of these companies' concerns, but on the other hand, it at least isn't a backdoor, right?
Yeah, I think I'm of a couple of minds about this. I do agree that it's not a backdoor, so that's good. On the other hand, like, I can totally see how this could be misused. I can totally see how a bad actor could like be the, you know, like the hidden chat member in a chat and like, you know, being used for scams or spams or that kind of thing. I think there needs to be definitely more discussion about the authentication process, making it maybe a little bit more transparent, making it a little bit clearer of what exactly the government would have access to and what they wouldn't have access to.
This is a better example than backdoors. Backdoors are bad because backdoors can be used by anybody. It's not hard to reverse engineer them once they're there. I mean, it's hard, but it's not impossible, and you want it to be impossible. Right. This says, okay, don't put a backdoor, just let us in on particular conversations.
Right.
That's less of an issue because if everybody's doing it right, then theoretically, only people with a warrant who are investigating people who deserve to be investigated would be let in. But like you say, it's still open for abuse. Yeah. And there is the potential, as they say, for unintentional vulnerability. So maybe the ability to insert a secret public key, it's not really public if it's secret, but you know what I mean? Like insert a public key into a conversation without the other two people knowing about it could be hijacked. That's a little more theoretical than backdoors, but it's still possible. So the question becomes, like, the most secure system is a mechanical system where the company could say, I don't touch anything. It's encrypted end to end. There's an authentication process that runs the same for everybody else. And what this ghost protocol suggests is, but every once in a while, you should insert yourself. And as soon as the company inserts itself, it's not as secure as if it is just as if they are fully separated from it. And so I guess my question is, can you ever have a situation that allows responsible, legitimate law enforcement surveillance?
That is the big question. And I don't think this answers it.
Yeah.
So
I don't think so either. Bloomberg reports its sources say the U.S. Department of Justice wants Sprint and T-Mobile to help a fourth wireless carrier with its own network get started as a condition for approving the merger of T-Mobile and Sprint. If you're like, huh? In other words, they're saying, okay, Sprint and T-Mobile, you are number 3 and 4 carriers. You can merge as long as you make sure there's a new fourth carrier. New Street Research's Blair Levin told Bloomberg a fourth competitor could come from the cable industry. Comcast and Spectrum and Dish have all got Spectrum, and they're all engaged in a certain level of providing a wireless service. So one of those providers could reach a virtual network agreement, an MVNO agreement, to fill in the gaps while it continues to build out its own infrastructure. Meanwhile, Reuters reports its sources say that T-Mobile and Sprint are considering divesting wireless spectrum in order to get approval for this deal. So it sounds like they're at least thinking about it. But the idea, I guess, would be to say to, I don't know, let's say Dish, you've got spectrum. We'll give you a little more spectrum, and we'll give you a deal to use our network as an MVNO until you get your network up and running in exchange for approval of this merger.
I guess it's just weird because Spectrum and Comcast and all of those, they're also giant companies in their own right. I mean, they have their own cable, and that's a big giant company too. That's why I think I wonder what the DOJ really wants is a fourth wireless, like a pure wireless carrier, like a T-Mobile or a Sprint or something, and not something that has a giant other company.
I think what they want is a lack of consolidation. They're like, we want to make sure there's at least a fourth player here. So I don't think it matters to them whether it's a big company or not. I mean, AT&T and Verizon are large companies as well. Yeah. So to me, it's less about the size of the company. In fact, the size of the company may be appealing to the DOJ here, because they may say, well, that company then has a better chance of surviving and creating a viable competitor.
I will say that the idea of MVNOs in general, I think it's not really talked about a lot. It seems like, anyway, but they're actually a really great option. I think Google Fi is actually really good, and I think that I think Walmart has its own a carrier, and I know they're not like real wireless carriers, but they're actually really good, viable, affordable options that people should look into. Anyway,
the thing is, they're dependent on these other carriers, and so I think that's why they're saying the MVNO could be a stopgap to help them get their infrastructure, but the goal would be to not have them be an MVNO, to in fact be have separate infrastructure of their own.
That's fair.
Stoic Squirrel says Sprint could split off Boost Mobile, T-Mobile could split off Metro PCS, but that wouldn't help. You need what Department of Justice wants is somebody to build out their own fourth network.
Their own network.
Yeah.
Right. That's going to be hard.
I don't see T-Mobile and Sprint being real excited about helping somebody else compete with them either. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be hard. So,
finally, China's Nreal, that's Nreal, announced a consumer version of its light AR glasses to arrive later this year for $499. If that rings a bell, we talked about them at CES. The glasses, in this case, though, use a phone rather than a PC like the ones showed off by Real at CES. Remember, they had a little attachment, little computer that you stuck in your pocket. That's what we saw at CES. You saw those at CES too, right?
Yeah.
Light AR looks like a pair of sunglasses, except for the wire coming down the side of your face that in this case plugs in by USB-C to a smartphone running on Qualcomm's Snapdragon 855 processor. They include Enreal Partners' Black Shark 2 gaming phone, the Oppo Remo 5G, and the LG ThinQ. But theoretically, any phone with a USB-C connection and a Snapdragon 855 could use this. A developer version that comes with that computing pack and a handheld controller that we saw at CES is also going to sell. That one will be $1,200, though, so quite a bit more expensive.
And it is a developer version.
So they're shipping that one in September because they want developers to create apps that can use the Light AR glasses when the $499 ships to the consumers later in the year.
Yeah, generally speaking, developer versions are more expensive because they're usually bought by companies trying to test things out. So I think, you know, it is $1,200, but that's not for consumers anyway. So I, you know,
The $500 version is the one that just attaches to a phone.
Yeah, that's the one.
And it looks like sunglasses except for the wire coming off your head. So it's better than a lot of these other augmented reality glasses that we've seen because it looks a little more normal, but it still has a wire coming down, right? It's not wireless. Yeah. That's how it's able to look like sunglasses because it doesn't have to have a lot of stuff in it. It's essentially just a display, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, honestly, at this point, I think that's not a bad way to go because I've seen the all-in-one headsets and they're really kind of bulky and they're big and they don't look good on everybody because they're like those sort of the squarish frames and they're not that great based on just my personal experience. But I think, you know, something like, I think right now from where we're at in terms of technology, I think offloading the battery and the processing power and the rendering power onto a phone really makes a lot of sense. It's cheaper too at $500. And phones are really good at rendering. Like that's what they do. And I think it's totally okay for these glasses to use the phone for rendering.
Yeah, oh, the Snapdragon 855 is built to handle some augmented reality stuff particularly, so it's taking advantage of that. Who is this for, though? Like, I totally agree with you that this is better. This is a better approach. It's a more consumer-friendly approach to somebody who might want to start doing this. It's similar to Google Cardboard and those kinds of situations where they're like, hey, you just stick your phone in and then you got some VR. But who will do this? Who will pay $500 to have this? Because the major, as you were saying, you were down at Santa Clarita at the augmented reality conference. The major use case for these things is in business, is in enterprise right now. This is definitely not a business case. This $499 fancy glass you put on your face is really meant for consumers.
Yeah, and that's the question, I think. What they really need to do is to sell the use case before they sell the hardware in some cases. Like they have to say, oh, this is what you're going to use it for. You're going to use it for like watching movies or like cool apps or cool games, or you can put your, you know, email on the corner as you're working on your document and they can multitask. I mean, something like that I think would maybe make the case a little bit better. But right now, the hardware is cool. The hardware is ready. The software, the applications are kind of the X factor here.
Did you spend any time? Did you see the Unreal when you were at the conference?
Yeah, I mean, it's good quality. Like the display is sharp and the hardware looks cool. I think it's really good value for the price. It's just, you know, the question of use case.
Yeah, make a use case for us, Unreal. Come on, let's do it. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. And thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them, and it affects what we put in the show for sure, as well as just being a great resource to keep up on other things going on in the tech world outside of the bubble. You can find that at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and conversations always going on in our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. Let's check out the mailbag. Andrew wanted to comment on our laptop form factor discussion on yesterday's show. We were talking about HP and Dell and Intel building second screens into laptops, foldable laptops and all that. Andrew says, hey guys, longtime listener, recent Patreon. The Honeycomb Glacier laptops, that's the Intel one you talked about, caught my attention because as an all-day laptop user, I love the idea of more screen real estate. However, No one who has multiple monitors stacks them on top of each other. They need to be side to side. The concept from Razer, Project Valerie, back in early 2017, seems much more exciting and practical. That's the one where the screens slide out from the sides. Mm-hmm. Turns out it hasn't been practical because they haven't brought it to market. But anyway, Andrew says, two bonus full-size monitors folding out from the main display. Perfection. In a world of foldable and rollable screens, I'm surprised no one has made this simple concept work. Before we move on, because Gary has his own take on the laptop form factors, I want to point out that I actually used to put my monitor above my laptop monitor. Like, I totally stacked them. But that doesn't prove Andrew wrong. I'm crazy. Most people don't do that. Anyway, Gary said, I can think of all kinds of things I would do with a dual screen laptop. Currently, I don't have a desktop Windows PC. I have a Surface Pro 4 that I plug a giant widescreen monitor into when I need more screen real estate. However, it would be really nice to have a laptop where I could, for instance, read a podcast script from the main screen while running Audacity on the auxiliary screen, or have a Google Hangout on the auxiliary screen and a web version of Cards Against Humanity on the main screen so players can talk together while playing the game. For tasks like these, jamming everything onto a laptop-sized screen is problematic. A pop-up auxiliary screen on a laptop would allow folks to do these types of tasks without being tethered to an external monitor. So it's not saying Andrew, it's not actually a counterpoint to Andrew, but Gary's just saying, yeah, it's some kind of secondary screen does seem like a really cool idea.
Yeah, I think the only question, I guess, is that you would still have to have an external keyboard, but that's, I guess, you're going to have it anyway, right? If you're using this kind of dual screen devices.
Well, did you see the Honeycomb Glacier one? It's a laptop. So it's got the laptop keyboard, then it's got the secondary screen, and then you got the main screen. So you don't need an external keyboard in that situation.
That's true.
So, yeah, I really like Wing Windows, because one of the issues when I was looking at more of the Intel and the Dell and the Lenovo designs is that I already have neck issues, like neck shoulder issues from sitting at a computer all day. Just kind of even having had to even tilting my head down just, half a degree just to look down, I can see being kind of an RSI issue. Whereas if they were side by side, I don't think it would be, at least for me in my current condition, would be a little less problematic.
One of the reviewers I read, though, had exactly the same approach, but liked Honeycomb Glacier because he said it moved the monitor farther up. And so he felt like he was looking straight on at the laptop monitor, and then he would tilt down when he needed to see the auxiliary monitor. But it actually helped him have a better ergonomic stance.
I love that they raised that, and I think the easy way to do that is to build a built-in laptop stand that would raise your laptop to get at eye level. But just the Wing Windows. There's something about the Wing screens that really appeal to me.
They just haven't been able to make them practical, I don't think, or they would be out, because I think everybody likes that idea, but you got to make it so they don't bend and break and get floppy. And it's not that the screens themselves would break, but the connections, from sliding in and out is something you have to be able to do. Whereas this hinge that Honeycomb Glacier has seems really solid.
Yeah, the durability is definitely a question when it comes to these like extra screens.
By the way, Nick with a C takes issue with the idea that no one wants stacked monitors, and Stoic Squirrel uses stacked screens because he uses a laptop and a monitor above it, just like me. So we're not crazy. There are a few of us.
Yes.
And finally, yesterday we mentioned that Intel doesn't do products. We were talking about the Intel reference design in relation to the Honeycomb Glacier. But Ion Computers notes that they do get real close. Arguably, they do a product with the Intel NUC, the next unit of computing, which comes as both bare bones, where you supply your own storage, or fully loaded PC with Windows 10 pre-installed for around $500 or $600. It's kind of like a Mac Mini. And the idea here is that Intel's like, we make all these parts, we're just putting them in a form factor and selling them, but it is essentially a PC. It just doesn't sell with a keyboard or monitor, but that's no different than a Mac Mini. I've had a lot of success with their systems in schools, medical offices, engineering firms, and recently VR workstations using HTC Vives with their recent Hades Canyon models, with surprising collaboration with AMD, which still blows my mind since I've been following PC hardware since the mid-90s, so it's not even always Intel's parts in there. I digress. If Intel wanted to release more Intel PCs in different form factors, I would definitely check them out because of their previous 6 years continuing their design and improvements on their portable PC NUC systems. So thank you, Ion Computers, for that. Good point. those NUCs are pretty much products out there for Intel. Okay. And thank you, Nicole Lee, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to find more Nicole, where should people go?
Well, you can check out what I'm talking about on a regular basis on twitter.com/Nicole. For my work, you can just go to Engadget.com.
I know you're working on some things you're not ready to talk about yet. Are there any hints you can drop? Or
just check back next week.
Be sure. Don't miss it. Be looking at twitter.com/Nicole. You won't regret it.
That's right.
Folks, our goal each month is to get one more patron than last month, and we are almost to the end of the month. So be the person that makes sure we're over the top. Become a DTNS member and get an ad-free RSS feed. I've got an explainer of ARM. If you've been a little confused, like, is ARM a chip maker? Why it's not a chip maker? But then are they not a patent troll? I've got a special episode of Editor's Desk coming to everybody at the $5 a month level and up on Saturday. You get that. You get the RSS with the ad-free episodes. You get special episodes looking back at tech news in the past at certain levels and more. Sign up. In fact, you'll get Roger's take on the Ryzen chips coming out later today in a column at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Tomorrow, Chris Mancini from Comedy Film Nerds is going to give us his impressions of the new Star Wars Galaxy Edge tech at the Disney amusement park. And Len Peralta will be with us, too. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.